Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, and welcome to Blizzard Watch, the podcast where we talk about Blizzard Entertainment and its many games and sometimes other things, like in our pre-show and stuff. But right now we are going to talk about Blizzard and its many games. I can foresee things that would stop us. Like, I'm not going to do that Simpsons thing where we look up and go, when two friends are together, even God himself can't stop them. No, God could. If God decides we don't want to do the show, we're not going to get there. But I'm not going there. Let's talk about stuff in World of Warcraft with my fantastic co-hosts, Liz Harper and Joe Perez. Joe is the person who actually makes money of our podcast work, and Liz is the person who tells us we can do things and things to do. So, yeah, say hello to them both and treat them with the respect they deserve. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Howdy.
So, July 6th is going to have some stuff happening on it, huh?
Yeah, I was writing out the calendar this week and I realized, wait a second, everything happens this Thursday. Like, literally everything. All of it is on Thursday.
Yeah, at least two big things that I can see right now. Like Overwatch Genesis. Let's talk about Overwatch Genesis, because Overwatch Genesis is something I think we've been all saying they should do for a very long time. And yet it's also weird. Am I correct in understanding this? Like, when I look at it, this thing's going to be streamed on YouTube.
And they're short episodes. It's like a 3-episode series, and they're like 5 to 10 minutes each. This is not, you know, we've all talked about, man, Overwatch would make a great animated series, a great anime. This is not that. This is a relatively short form series.
This feels like proof of concept more than anything else.
Which is weird that they would be looking for a proof of concept. We know that the proof of concept would work because we've already seen it with, I mean, let's just say it, like, Arcane, right? Like, it's
Arcane, the Dragon Age one, Castlevania. You know, it's not like we are hurting for animated series based on video game properties. And I'm not saying that that's bad, that they shouldn't make any more. I'm saying we know people will watch them. Make the thing. Don't tease me. But, you know, whatever. Liz, you were talking.
You can already tell about the popularity of these things just by the response to the Overwatch cinematics. Those were so amazing, so great, and I wanted Blizzard to continue these stories. And they really haven't. We have not seen a lot of story out of Overwatch.
Yeah, it has been an ongoing bafflement on my part. And don't worry, guys, I'm not going to jump on that again because I know people are tired of hearing me rant about it. But I will say that I am cautiously optimistic that they're doing this. I was very surprised that they're doing it via the method of three shorts that they do all the time on their own anyway. Although these aren't by them. These are more straight up animated. But the time is about the same as like the you guys remember all of them, right? I mean, I feel like I'm talking about stuff like as if you don't know it, but both of you have seen all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the Bastion short, Like
our listeners may or may not know it, but
they've been doing these since Overwatch, the original Overwatch, came out. Stuff like the Bastion short or the Reinhardt short, which did a lot to make Reinhardt an actual person. Quite frankly, before that, I kind of thought Reinhardt was just yelling loudly for no reason guy and didn't pay much attention to him. But after that short, I was like, oh, okay. I get what this is about. I get who this person is. There's just been a ton of them, and they've all been really good. And the one for when they announced Overwatch 2 in 2019, the cinematic they put out for it is perfection. And quite frankly, it could have been an episode, like the things they're doing now, it could have been that. You would have watched that, and I got goosebumps watching that thing, and I didn't even play Overwatch. So, yeah, I definitely think that this is something they could that could really be big for them. I just, I'm surprised that they're taking what feels like an intermediate step.
I mean,
but, go ahead.
I mean, this is an intermediate step and I'm all for it and everything like that. But you know, I'm going to be that guy that I hate to sound like everybody else on the internet. I would still like to just be able to play the damn game. Like
there is that. Yeah.
animated series is great and all, but I still can't play the game. So my level of caring about the IP has begun to tank rather drastically.
Yeah, I would imagine. That is
the other thing.
Go ahead, Liz.
You talk about this as an intermediary step. We don't know if they're planning anything beyond this. I mean, they've done. We've seen shorts before, and it has never been a lead-in to a longer series. There are plenty of Blizzard properties that would make really interesting, really compelling animated series, and they just have not taken that leap to bring. To bring these things into a format like this, even though they continue to put out cinematics across all of their games, which are tremendous, tremendous and amazing. Imagine a Diablo 4 animated series that was in the, you know, just look at Byte 3 They Come, that first cinematic they put out. You could do a Diablo series that felt like the Castlevania Netflix series, which was really phenomenal. And like, we have the proof of concept. You're exactly right. We have proof of concept that video games as TV series can work really well, and people can love them. They can be hugely popular. And Blizzard has all these great stories, but it hasn't tried to take that leap, particularly with Overwatch. Overwatch has had such deep lore presented in its cinematics that we haven't seen in the game, and we haven't seen anywhere else.
Yeah, and they've also had a real hard time with other properties they tried to do, like graphic novel they told us about for some reason. That it didn't. So I guess I should just be happy I'm getting anything. That feels like something I could say. I don't want to, and I don't, like I said, I don't want to like take this and like be the typical glasses, not just half empty, but somebody, you know, peed in it type mentality. I'm actually pretty excited about this. I am going to watch on the 6th with a lot of excitement. You know, we'll see. Speaking of stuff happening on the 6th, though, we're also getting another one of those dev live streams. They've been doing these a lot. They did one, like I'd say, in June. Like I'm sure they did one in June, right?
You should stop and say which game this is for. I do not know.
I thought I said Diablo 4. I thought I said Diablo 4 is doing a dev live stream. I swear to God, I thought I did that. I'm sorry, guys, if I didn't. I mean Diablo 4 here.
It's also possible that went completely in one ear now, the other. That happens sometimes.
You know, it's either way, it is Diablo 4. They're doing a dev live stream on the 6th, the same day as the Overwatch short series starts. And they did one in June. I can never remember the actual date of the June one, but I know they did one because they talked about stuff coming in season one. This one's going to be also about season one. This one's mostly season one. That's what they're kind of leading into it, saying this is going to talk about season one.
They touched on season one just a bit in the last dev live stream, and this is supposedly all about season one. We do know season one is supposed to start in July. We don't know exactly when, but mid to late July. I expect we'll get a release date for season one this week.
I would hope so. I mean, come on, guys, tell us when it is already. If for no other reason that some of us bought the Ultimate Edition and we don't get our stuff until season one starts. But also because, yeah, I'd like to know how much time do I have to get this character to 100? I've been taking it easy the past few days, and I kind of feel like I shouldn't have. But you know, I want to know, do I have 10 days? Do I have 5 days? Is it next week? Is it the end of the month? Come on, just give me something, please, guys.
The other question is, do you need to get your main character to level 100? Because I don't know that you do. I mean, is that going to play
an important
role?
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case either. I want to get my character to level 100 before it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely. If we can just start a season character just as soon as the season's up, then cool. Mm-hmm. That's good to know. There's lots of other questions, like the rebirthing thing. Are they going to have that in here? What exact form are the things that they're preserving, like the discovered areas and altars of Lilith? We're told that you'll have those, but not other things. Is that still the case? Is that where we're going with this, or have they made another decision? What will happen to your season character after the season? Which nobody has said anything about, as far as I know.
I actually think they have said after the season, your character will move back to the Eternal Realm, which is the realm we're all playing in right now.
Yeah.
At least I remember that. I don't think I made that up in my head.
Yeah, I haven't found that yet, but that doesn't mean anything. Sometimes I just don't find it. But yeah, there's a lot of it would be really nice to have a place where we can just go to and it will have all the answers. It would be even nicer if I also did a post so I don't have to watch the whole thing. Because, man, sometimes watching a whole, hour and a hour and a half video to get these answers can be a lot.
Yeah, and the last live stream they did, they didn't make a blog post. They didn't do anything like that. If you want to know what they talked about, you need to watch the video, which is, an hour and 20 minutes, or you need to go to a blog, like Blizzard Watch, which we attempt to provide this service to you, but it's like they don't provide any official information, and that's really weird to me.
Yeah, we're going to also, while we're talking about the 6th and stuff that's going to be happening on it, another dev chat video is also happening on the 6th. This one's for World of Warcraft, and we don't know what the topic is, and we're not even sure when during the day they're going to do it. They're going to be doing it. We don't have a date or a time right now, whereas we know that the Diablo 4 dev live stream is at 11 a.m. on the 6th. We don't know what time the WoW one will be, and we don't know the topic, although Liz here says, and I'm going to read this exactly, but it's got to be about patch 10.1.5, and I agree. I'm assuming they might also do some WoW Classic stuff, like Wrath Classic might get.
Oh, that's true, that's true.
But I'm assuming it's going to primarily be about 10.1.5. Do you guys, either of you, have anything to say on that subject?
I will say they said this is going to be a video, so I don't think it's going to be a live stream. This is just going to pop up on YouTube, probably.
Dev chat video is
at some point.
Yeah.
I think doing two live streams in one day would be a bit much. I mean, even though it's completely different teams, it's a lot to ask people. But I mean, Joe, what do you think it's going to be?
I honestly don't know that I can add anything that you've already done. But I have no idea. I'm very curious to see what it's about.
And this could just be a recap of what we already know about patch 10.1.5. I mean, it may not have much information at all. It could just be, hey, 10.1.5 is coming next week. Here's what's in it.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Wouldn't think they would hype a video like that up very much, but maybe that could be all this is.
I will mention some stuff we know about 10.1.5 that's new from last week. First off, the Dawn of the Infinite dungeon, the mega dungeon, that's coming in 10.1.5, has seen some pretty significant changes to the first, second, and last bosses. The first boss just got like toned way down. If you go and look at the write-ups of what the encounter is like now versus what the encounter was like, it has been hotfixed to be significantly. The second encounter is not tremendously nerfed, but it is slightly nerfed. It's one of those running through time ways things, so it's actually going to be a lot. It's kind of hard to explain the fight to even tell you how it's been nerfed, but they've taken some damage stuff and made it less bad. And the last fight, I mean, some stuff feels nerfed. They've lowered the amount of health you need to get through to end the fight, but they've also increased the debuffs that you get as you do the fight. So that's sort of a mixed bag there. But the overall message seems to be that they've taken player feedback into account and that they've adjusted the fights to be a little bit more forgiving.
I've heard that the last encounter is 10, 11 minutes long
in this
dungeon. Yeah. And that's a lot.
And
that's
a lot. It's a 10, 11 minute fight that's basically all about getting through the massive health bar. And so they basically cut that in half. the amount of health you have to get through is like you had to get through 40% of his health bar to get through the fight, and now you have to get through 20% of his health bar to get through the fight. So that's a pretty big deal. But I will see how it actually plays out with them increasing the debuffs commensurately. It might just be faster but harder. We'll see. Whereas before, you know, it's not hard necessarily, but you take 11 minutes to get through it all, which always, of course, increases your odds of failing. The more times you have to repeat it, and we've all had raid fights like this. Like, I think the Anduin fight in last expansion is definitely a fight where you feel like, my God, won't this end?
Or Sylvanas. Sylvanas was easily a 15-minute encounter.
And by the end of it, you're just, like, holding on by your teeth going, oh, my God, just fall down.
The problem I would regularly have on the Sylvanas fight is, you know, we'd get to phase three and you're working on phase three and then you wipe and you go back to phase one.
It was just so long.
And like I'd done phase one so many times that I was just like, it's boring and I'm not paying attention and I would screw it up because I wasn't focused because I was bored. This is not interesting. We're working on phase three and we can't get back there until we do this boring thing again.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like an Elden Ring fight, like the last fight of Elden Ring, which I have actually done, when you're fighting Radagon or whatever his name is, and then you get through that fight, and then you suddenly the Elden Beast shows up, and you're like, what? Why is this here? And then when you wipe to him, you have to fight that first guy again. And you're like, no, I killed you already. Just go away. Get out of the way. I want to get to the part. I don't know how to do it yet, so I can learn how to do it so I can be done. Yeah, it can be really something that is just time consumption is sometimes worse than anything else.
Well, there's a fatigue level, right? So like we've talked about this in the past where like fights get increasingly complex. There's a lot of things to juggle or there's things to, you know, pay attention to in different phases or whatever. And for the most part, that's gotten better. They've pared it down. We don't have another Thunder King fight. We haven't had a Thunder King fight in a while, thankfully. But like
Joe, why
yes.
did you do this? Why did you mention that fight? I had to tank that fight, Joe.
I had to heal that fight, idea? Matt. Yes, yeah,
no,
I do.
Healing that fight was hard because I healed that fight.
Regardless, I understand. No, I'm sorry about your trauma. I'm sorry about your trauma, but I have to finish the thought. But like, there is a certain thing to say that because not only was fights like that complicated, they were very long, and you check out after a certain amount of time. And the longer the fight, the more likely you are to make mistakes. And it's no longer about the encounter. It's about your attention span.
And that gets worn out through a night anyway.
Yeah. Like we call it chicken time.
Yeah. Even if you've like, if you're doing everything, like if you are literally blitzing your way through a raid in one night and you can kill pretty much everything, by the end of the night, you will be tired and you will start making decisions that are not in the best interests of a speedy clear just because you're bored. And sometimes it's fun. Everyone enjoys it. And sometimes you wipe the raid three times trying to do it. And now you feel like a jerk and everybody is upset. And then you add in the fact that the fight will be like, as Liz pointed out, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if you wipe at any point, you start over. Yeah, it can be pretty bad. So I am glad to see them make that adjustment for the Dawn of the
Final Boss. Dungeon. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that overall, those are some good changes. Also, though, did I mention the Holy Paladin changes?
Yeah, I saw that posted on WoWhead, and it's so small. This is like two lines of changes. I was like, okay, did we really need to?
Yeah, like, is this necessary or unnecessary to even mention? But it kind of is, because I feel like the absorb getting reduced by 20% is, like, it by itself, if that was all they did, that's just a straight-up nerf. But then they went and put in, and now it can crit. Like, let's actually tell people what we're talking about. Holy Paladins have an ability called Greater Judgment. It's an absorb, you know, but right now the absorb is at a certain level. It's being reduced by 20%, but then it can crit, which means it could absorb double. So if it's 80% of where it is now, but then it crits, now it will be absorbing 160% of where it is now. And that's not something you see a lot. I'm not a healer full time. I'm not a paladin full time, but I can't recall an absorb ability that does a lot of critting. Like Joe?
No, this is the first time I think we've seen an absorb ability have a crit effect.
Yeah. I don't entirely understand how it works. And the actual text of the skill is, judgment deems the target unworthy, preventing the next X damage dealt by the target. So it's kind of like, it's kind of a reverse of
it's
the
a
sword
debuff.
Shield. It's,
yeah. Instead of bubbling somebody, you're putting a field around somebody that makes them not hurt people, I guess.
Yeah.
I pat you in the holy bubble wrap of the light. Like, oh man, I gotta pop all this stuff before I can hurt those guys.
I don't understand how it's gonna work if it can crit. But I mean, I guess you're just doing a bigger debuff.
Yeah, you hurt people even less now. You tried to pop my bubble.
Well, it's like a proc almost. And we've seen procs mm-hmm. on trinkets and things like that can crit before.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's essentially in the same vein as that. I think it's neat. I think it's an interesting value add. How do you feel about it, Liz? Since you are a holy paladin.
I have absolutely no feelings about it. And honestly, I don't know if I'll take the talent. I probably will. It's better than my alternatives. It's going to be more useful. But it's one of those things. It's like a talent I will take because it does something, as opposed to all of the other talents in this kind of area, which are like, this is where you could pick up Retribution Aura, which I'm never going to run, or I can pick up some CC, which is useful in some fights, but not in a lot of fights for me as a healer, or I can pick up an Interrupt, which sometimes, great, I love being able to do it, but I don't always need it. So it's like a point I'll take because I need to take a point, and because it provides something instead of nothing, but I don't have strong feelings on this one. In general, during the PTR period, adjustments are going on so much, and they usually don't do like a final balance pass things until close to the end. So it's very hard, at least I find it very hard, to judge changes until it's live, because that's when they're going to have done kind of a final tuning pass. And you can't tell the value of some of these things without knowing what the numbers are. I mean, if this is like a damage shield for like 1,000 damage, if that's what it turns out being after it's balanced and polished up, that's not worthwhile. But if it's a damage shield for like 50,000 damage, that's something different. And we just don't know how it's going to play out and whether this change is going to stick, whether this is going to, we don't know. So,
but
while
we're talking about that, I think it's worth mentioning that, this patch is next week.
I know. How did this happen?
Yeah, it's 10.1.5 is next week. And that's pretty late in the development to suddenly do this to a talent. It's not that this is
It's
bad.
Not that they haven't done that before, though. They've done that
No,
in
no,
the past.
No, I'm not saying that they haven't. But every time they've done it in the past, it's been different. It's been one of those things you're like, what? And so that's why, as somebody who does have a paladin alt and who does enjoy my paladin alt, I do look at this and go, oh, how's that going to work? So I think I will say that confusion is a feeling. And that is the feeling I currently have, is confusion. but while we're talking about this, since we mentioned that, we like I said, WoW patch 10.1.5 is next week on the 11th. Also, the Overwatch Summer Games starting next week on the 11th. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Summer Games is going to have Lucio Ball again. I mean, hopefully everyone loves Lucio Ball because it is back. you can't not love Lucio Ball because it's oh my God, I'm sorry. It's all you have.
Resistance to Lucio Ball is futile.
But yeah, they do these events and I start to feel that they're kind of samey. But yeah. Overwatch has also been doing a lot of like new events, like seasonal events have been coming out.
Like season 5 has got this whole fantasy thing going on.
Yes, it has kind of a fantasy. Yeah. Like every season has its own theme, and they've been playing with events that play into those themes rather than events that are just, this is the regular event we're doing, this is the regular event. But Summer Games coming back. So I think it's good. I think it's good to have kind of this rotation that you can expect and kind of events that you enjoy that are, it's sometimes you look forward to things. I mean, I don't really do much for WoW Winter Vale anymore, but it's always kind of, it's this little happy moment. Okay, I'm going to go do this thing that I enjoy and I'm going to pick up presents under the tree. So
I've always been a big fan of Fyre Festival, even though I don't I don't do the Ahun fight anymore. Not because it's too hard or whatever. I just don't want anything from it. But I do like I still like seeing the holidays in game because they provide an in-game passage of time metric. And quite frankly, with the real world the way it is, sometimes I need a reminder that it is in fact not, you know, it's not September yet. It's July. You relax, Matt. You know, it's times where having a little holiday thing does help. So yeah, I think it's cool that they
also
there is. You
know, go ahead, Joe.
I just want to point out that when Liz was explaining this, for me it sounded like Lucille Ball instead of Lucio Ball.
Totally different thing.
And now I just want an Overwatch match where we're just like working at the chocolate factory.
Vitamina Vigimin. Vitamina Vigimin is the thing. But we kind of jumped this one. Oh, go ahead.
This will also have a new Winston's Beach volleyball mode. So, you know, you get your summer activities in.
Man, Top Gun theme song music playing in the background. But I was just actually, since we moved to July 11th, because it was the next day with a lot of stuff happening, we kind of skipped over the fact that BlizzCon tickets are going up on sale in 2 days after the 6th, on the 8th. So July 8th, and then again on July 22nd, you can buy BlizzCon tickets. Or you can be like me and stare wistfully at your bank account and go, maybe next year.
Yeah, I'm in that camp as well. I can't justify it.
Yeah, just the travel expenses are so huge. I mean, ticket prices have gone up this year, but it's really the travel that gets me. It's the hotel the flight hotel. Is just so huge.
Yeah, absolutely. For myself, I mean, real life incidents also come in. You know, it's kind of hard to plan a thing where you don't even know if you'll have a passport. And I don't want to be trying to fly on my U.S. passport. It just occurs to me. I do, in fact, still have U.S. citizenship. I'm one of them exotic dual citizen people now. I'm like a DualShock controller, but for countries. Wait, no, that doesn't work. But yeah, like there's a lot of reasons why travel like that can be hard. But nevertheless, if you are going to try and get some tickets, your first chance at them is going to be on the 8th. Dos vidanya and good luck to you all. And if you don't get them on the 8th, there's going to be another attempt on the 22nd. So yeah, next week and then towards the end of the month, you'll have your opportunity to get BlizzCon tickets. Sometimes they've added a third time, but not always.
One thing I find interesting here is that both ticket sales are at 10 a.m. Pacific. In the past, I want to say that they've done multiple rounds of ticket sales at different times to give people different chances to get tickets. So like, if you happen to work a shift that has you working Saturdays at 10 a.m., you have no chance whatsoever of getting these tickets. Do y'all remember that? Am I making that up?
I don't think you're making it up. I don't think it was the 2019 one, but I know that there was talk about that in 2018. I remember us talking about it. Remembering anything before 2020 is a real struggle for me. So
I don't know if the world existed before 2020, and it definitely doesn't exist after 2020. So here we are.
Yeah. But regardless, it is interesting. That's why I mentioned that there could well be another line of tickets, but maybe there won't be. These are the ones they have announced. These are the ones we know about. 10 a.m. Pacific time on the 8th and the 22nd. So if you can't make time to get them, but you really want to get them, I don't really know what to suggest other than maybe you could get a friend or family member to do it for you. I don't know. I don't know how transferal is going to work this time, too, because it's entirely digital, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
I mean, well, we don't have the details yet, but
yeah, we don't know how that's going to work in terms of that. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But
and I think ticket prices deserve a mention here. Admission is $299, which is up $70, and the Portal Pass is way up. Portal Pass is $799, up $250 from the last BlizzCon.
Yep,
that's a lot. I mean, Portal Pass. Seems I've never done Portal Pass. I mean, I think they just did it. The first one was maybe 2019. It was a new thing.
Yeah, it was
a new thing. Where you get admission to the con, but you also have early entrance into the convention center and access to a special lounge where it's possibly very quiet and peaceful, as opposed to the BlizzCon floor, which can be not at all quiet and peaceful.
I got Portal Pass even though I didn't pay for my tickets that year. The person who got them for me got Portal Pass, and it was a nice lounge. And I had a really nice conversation with somebody who no longer works there in that lounge. And yeah, so it was nice. But I don't know if I'd spend $800. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is a lot of money to spend to go hang out in a lounge. There are a lot of places to hang out, you know? I mean,
and slightly early access to to the lounge, not even the rest of everything else. Like, I don't get it.
I do think it's like you don't have to wait in those giant lines because if you want to get into the convention center.
Yeah.
You know, there's a real crush of people trying to get in. If you want to get in first thing, it's a crush.
Getting around that crowd, the crowd is still there in the convention, by the way.
You don't
get there, but getting around the ticket line crowd crunch, that was nice. It's just looking at it going, if I'm already spending like what, $200-$300 a day that I'm there and just on a hotel. And then I'm probably going to need to rent a car, or if I can drive, or get a cab if I can't. There's a lot of expenses to a trip like BlizzCon. It's going to be kind of hard for me to justify throwing another $800 on the pile to get in a little early and to get to a lounge, as nice as the lounge was. And there's also I think they've pretty much made all the stuff that is available on video now, right?
The virtual ticket stuff is all free. The event will be live streamed for free. So you don't have to buy a virtual ticket. You don't have to buy anything if you're watching at home, which is definitely a big appeal as the prices have gone up to an extent where it is a little harder to afford. Travel costs are up. Hotel costs are up. I mean, I remember like the first year I went to BlizzCon, you know, you could be like right up at the convention center for like $200 a night. And now it's like maybe $450, you know, kind of things like that.
It'll be more than that. It'll be more than that this year.
Also, like, you know, in some of the years past, like while I don't advocate for it, there used to be the option to do Airbnb. And now we're seeing people go to conventions and things like that where their Airbnb is being canceled day of because they can charge the person that owns it can charge a higher rate. So they'll cancel your rate and try to book it for somebody else. I literally had a friend go to Gamma, which is one of the largest retailer conventions.
Game Association manufacturers.
Yeah. Most people at home probably don't know what that is, but it's a big deal. And he showed up and his Airbnb canceled. They didn't even tell him. Like, he literally was driving. He was driving up to the location. So, like, even going to cons like that, it's getting a little bit strained unless you can like really secure something. So, like, and even then, you're probably going to be traveling to get to the convention because you're in order to get a decent rate, you're not going to be near it.
Yeah.
And,
so, but you know, at the same time, the fact that there's no virtual ticket anymore, like literally, they're just streaming the whole thing. That's great. And we should definitely say that that is a good choice.
Oh yeah.
If they're going to charge more for the convention, at least they've given you an option. Like at least that way you can still see what happens there and still get a taste of what's going on. It's a different experience. And I won't lie. These guys have seen it more than I have. The one time I got to go though, it felt very different. So I will say that if you've got the money for this, I do recommend getting to go. Because it is amazing. I don't know if I'd need to go again though, but that's everyone's different, and I don't want to just sit here and just complain about the price the whole time. The price is what the price is. You can afford it or you can't.
I mean, with inflation, I don't think this is an unreasonable price compared to other kind of convention tickets. This seems a little high, but not outlandish. And also, one of the nice things about BlizzCon is it's like you pay the ticket price and you go in and you can do everything. Like, you want to get an autograph from the developers, you can do that. You just have to budget the time. And usually the lines aren't that bad, but if you go to another convention you want to get someone's autograph, you're going to pay more.
Oh, and only that, but I'll call out Paizo on this one. The last convention that Paizo was at, which was, I believe it was at Gen Con, they had their own separate tickets that you had to buy in order to get into the Paizo stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crowds can be really bad. You can get people going into, like, the room for a specific event and, like, camping out there for the entire day because they want to see something. And you can't, if you show up before the event, you can't get in. And while BlizzCon is crowded, there are no events that you cannot attend, or it's very rare. Like, you will go there and maybe you have a seat in the back if you show up late, but you can do everything.
And I will say, it's a good experience if you've never done it before. Yeah. And it's nice. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was agreeing. We were just saying the word yes.
And it's nice being around like people that, you know, share the same interests and hobbies as you. Because like when you go to a general convention, there's a million things going on. Like if you go to Gen Con as an example, people might be there because they like D&D. People might be there because they like Warhammer 40K. People might be there because they're there trying to see what's going on with, XYZ game. It's all over the place. And while it's a general camaraderie, it's not quite the same thing as going to a focus convention like BlizzCon, where everybody there loves the Blizzard products and you're sort of among your own people. And this is something that I said years ago, and I'll say this again. BlizzCon is a very good first convention experience because it's just easy. Like, you don't have to worry about the social awkwardness of, like, striking up a conversation. Well, you can. I mean, obviously, everybody's different. But, like, if you talk about a Blizzard game, chances are the person next to you is going to talk about a Blizzard game with you. And it's a decent area. Like, the weather during that time of year is always nice, too. You don't have to worry about inclement weather. There's plenty of things to do in the surrounding area as well. So like, it's not just about the convention, but you can go and do things. We used to throw one hell of a party. Let's be honest.
Oh yeah.
I miss good those times. Days. But like, there are plenty of parties and things like that and social events to go to. Just, you know, obviously social awareness, be careful, et cetera, et cetera. But it is an easy first convention experience for people.
I do want to talk about this a little, is that they have presented this as a different kind of BlizzCon, and I'm very curious what it's going to look like. Blizzard has said this year the goal is to make BlizzCon feel more experiential than before. It will be a one-of-a-kind immersive experience, bringing attendees into the universes of Warcraft, Diablo, and Overwatch with massive installations, art, and thematic spaces. I'm curious as to what this will look like, and
I'm just going to say this
how
right
different
now.
It's going
to
be.
I don't need to be brought all that deeply into the world of Diablo. I don't know if you guys have noticed, things happen there, and they're not good. Like I think the smell alone would be more than I want. Just as a game, love it. As an actual experience, don't know that I would love it. Just putting that out there. Just sowing some seeds, Blizzard. You know, if you're currently getting a whole bunch of meat to let leave out in the sun, maybe don't do that. You could skip that.
I mean, you've got to admit that the atmosphere, just the art style, the light. I mean, in Diablo 4 is just incredible. It's like they've made the game like a Caravaggio painting that you're wandering around in.
But so, that's exactly how I want it. I want it to be a game where I do that. I don't want to, like, if I could smell half of the things that I would smell in any video game, I would not want that experience. Imagine playing Dungeons & Dragons, and then as you throw Fireball into a crowd of, like, let's say Yeti that are attacking you, and then suddenly, as you do that, the DM like suddenly turns on a leaf blower and blows the smell of burning wet fur at you. You would not like that. That would be bad. So I'm just saying, some immersion good, too much immersion bad.
So I'm just curious as to what this is going to turn out like. I mean, what do y'all think Blizzard is doing with this experiential BlizzCon?
I mean, they've done stuff on that edge of that before, like the Darkmoon Fair type stuff.
Yeah.
I think they're probably going to try and take it to another level where you walk in, and when you go to the WoW stuff, it's all held in a place where you get, like, you know, am I in Orgrimmar now? Like, where you get to see things that remind you of the places inside World of Warcraft. And so for Hearthstone and Diablo and Overwatch and so forth.
Yeah, I am outside of like a LARP experience. I can't really think of what they could do.
I'm thinking of Disney here.
Could be.
I don't think they've got the money for a full on Disney thing where they have animatronics and they have people dressed up. But like when you go to like Epcot, like it doesn't feel like actually going to Europe, but it definitely doesn't feel like being in Orlando at a theme park either.
Fair.
So, very true.
So I'm thinking stuff along those lines. That is my idea for what they, or the Star Wars thing that they're doing at Disneyland now.
Mm-hmm.
where
that's
it's like,
pretty great.
Yeah, like, and you could do that kind of thing for Warcraft, where you go in and it's like, you know, welcome to the barracks here at Orgrimmar. We're going to help you make your own axe. I don't know if they're going to let people do that, yeah, but I'm saying
it does sound like the language around the Star Wars hotel experience.
I know that you didn't mean it, but you said the language around the Star Wars hotel. I just imagined all the swearing because I know some people did. But yeah, I do want to mention, because we haven't really talked about it yet, but the Twist beta is going to start season two, or it has already started.
It already has. Yeah. It's the seasons are like a monthly thing. It's at least in the beta, it's like a monthly thing. And they launched the first season like right at the end of June. It was less than a week long, I think. And so now it's season two. It's already season two. We've had this out for like a week, and it's season two of the Hearthstone Twist beta. And it already kind of feels like it's settled into a really predictable like meta where you go in and you know the decks you're going to see. And I think that's kind of the problem with constructed modes in Hearthstone, where you're building decks. It's, you know, people figure out what decks work and then they only play those decks. That's it. That's it. You go in and that's all you see. There's like a handful of decks and that's all you ever see. And it starts to feel a little repetitive. And this, both last month's Twist games and this month's Twist games, the rule in them is that you can only use cards from your class. You can't use any neutral cards. That's kind of the whole thing about Twist, is that it will have a twist on the rules when you play it, but it's the same one they had in June, which kind of makes sense. June's only lasted like a week. But it really feels like it's settled down and it's kind of gotten predictable, even though it hasn't been available for that long.
Yeah, but hopefully when it actually goes live, since it will change every month, it won't.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope they don't decide to, okay, we've figured something out and we're going to do the same thing for the next 3 months. I hope they keep mixing it up, because that's what's interesting, because Hearthstone does settle into a meta and it gets pretty samey.
Okay. I don't think there's anything else to talk about. We don't have any other like news or events to really talk about at this point. So I guess we're going to move on to the two emails we got. The first one, hopefully, will keep us for a while, because it's my favorite topic. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll like it. Maybe they won't. Oh, no, we didn't mention Shore Strider. Ha-ha! I caught me this time. Now everyone has caught me trying to skip something. And finally, it happened that I caught me. So this is the Amazon Prime Gaming. We also didn't mention the Diablo Twitch stuff, but we'll come back on that in a second.
The Diablo Twitch stuff is over.
Oh, they're not doing one this week?
No, it's over. Last week was Barbarians, and that was it. Oh. We're done.
I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why I'm saying because I was the one waiting for the Barbarian week, but yeah. Okay, cool. We don't have to mention that. We do have to mention Prime Gaming's. So yeah, the Swift Shore Strider mount is now available until the 27th. It says through 27 here. So
Yeah.
It's there now, and it'll be there for the next month. It is basically the same. If you did the Twitch thing, it's basically the same kind of thing where you have to sign up. You don't have to like do anything. You just have to link your account to your Blizzard account in order to get the mount. You also have to have Prime Gaming. You have to actually you have to sign up for
Prime. You have to be an Amazon Prime subscriber. And then, yeah, it's just you link your Amazon account to your Twitch account, and your Twitch account is linked to your WoW account. It's kind of like an excessive number of steps. But, yeah, then you just, like, log in and click claim, and then you got a new mount next time you log into WoW.
Yeah, and it's a cool mount. It's a weird bird. I like to call it that because it's really reductionist, and everyone's like, weird bird, what does that mean? Find out for yourself. But it's not like, it doesn't look like the Blood Elf mount or the Crane mounts. It's more like that bird from Mulgore.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the Mulgore bird.
Yeah.
It's an ostrich.
Big.
It's like a featherless ostrich.
I don't know. Honestly, to me, it looks way more like a Diatrema. It's got the big hatchet face, whereas ostriches have the little meat face. An ostrich is actually much closer, in my opinion, to the Mechanistriders that the gnomes drive. This thing is just like, hey, look at my head. I have an axe for a face.
It's an emu.
Yeah. I think it's a Diatrema. I don't think it's any living or even recently extinct bird. I think it's a Diatrema.
I always thought they looked a little bit like plucked chickens, because it's like they're kind of birds, but they aren't
feathery. Please, please. I haven't eaten yet. I'm hungry.
Well, let me tell you, there's something you can eat. It's called Throne of Thunder, The Final Encounter, and why you should never just bring it up.
I hear it's high in protein. Also, man, also fight. High in salt.
Man, that fight, that fight's sodium content was so high that that made the Darumu fight look like a fun pastime. Oh, man.
Just you know, now that we're on the topic, before we go on to anything else, I really, like, that raid makes me have a warm memory of Maticus not being able to see the maze on Darumu, and me always leading him to his death every single night, and him not learning for an entire tier. That's for you, Maddie.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, it was a case of my wife not being able to see it. And so my choice was to attempt to get her through it, or to wipe, you know, which would mean wiping the raid, or letting her die, which would mean successfully completing the encounter and then having to explain to my wife that yes, I did let her die, which didn't lead to fun times. Wasn't good. Darumu bad, but thrown the final fight with Li Shen gives me hives. Like, to this day, remembering that fight makes me twitch.
It is one of the few fights that just makes me not want to heal.
It makes me want to do anything, because it's like, no, we're going to move on. We are not going to spend the entire fight ranting at game podcast ranting about that fight. There, okay. Did we cover the actual Amazon Prime thing? Did we actually talk about it?
Yes, we did.
We did. We did.
Man, later on, I'm going to listen to this.
That's the trauma.
Yeah, later on I'm going to listen to this, because I actually go back and listen to our old podcasts. I have a podcast app and I listen to us. And I'm going to go back to this point and go, that's the point where I lost my stuff. Right there. That's where I lost it. But yeah, let's get into these. If you have a question for the show, first off, I understand that as we're recording this, it's July 4th, so a lot of you guys weren't around. I get it, and that's understandable. But thank you very much, those who did ask us questions. If you've got one for the show, you can either email it to us, and we got two emails this time, but podcast@blizzardwatch.com, subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. You've sent a lot of Diablo questions in for Lore Watch, and that's really cool. Thank you. We did a good question and answer one last week. I don't know if we're going to do another one about Diablo this week. Joe, do you think we will?
We have enough that we could probably do another episode of it, so yes, yeah. Very likely.
Okay, so keep that in mind. If you want to ask questions for the Lore Watch, you know, just make sure you put Lore Watch in the title. If you'd like to ask questions to us via our Discord, we've got the podcast Q and podcast questions channel for non-patrons. That's just for them. But if you are a patron, you can get first crack at a question by asking the question in the patron Q and podcast questions channel, because quite frankly, you know, you guys help support the site, and that's one of the things we give you in return. We really appreciate you guys doing that. But we also appreciate people who can't, you know, be patrons, but who still listen to our stuff and tell other people about it and read our site and all that stuff. So we have two channels for both, and that's great. First question I'm going to go with here, I'm going to just read them this week because last week I made Joe read everything. But this one I'm going to ask because it was asked by Tetsemi a little later. If you were to make a Shadowrun or Cyberpunk the MMO, what class would you play and what would make it your favorite? Unfortunately, this is long, so yeah. What would make it your favorite? So I don't think Liz particularly cares, but she has played Shadowrun a couple times, so I'm going to actually throw it to her first.
Liz has also played Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
A little bit. I haven't finished it. In kind of high-tech games, I gravitate towards, like, hacker classes, like going towards the technology angle and, you know, bypassing security systems, getting into stuff, except I actually had a huge amount of trouble playing that in Cyberpunk 2077 because I was very squishy. So that's what I gravitate for, but I'm not sure that I actually wind up enjoying that kind of gameplay. I imagine it's something that would probably even out a little later as you get better at things and, you know, just kind of know where to specialize to keep yourself alive. But playing the early game, I tried for a while and I died a lot and I dropped it and didn't get back to the game for a while. So I don't know. I don't know the right direction to go. And I've still struggled with that because I go into the game and, I get into a lot of brawls because I'm bad. I'm bad at things and I just wind up fighting my way through them. And that does not work if you're playing kind of a stealthy sort of hacky character. So I don't have a good answer here. Someone else talk.
Joe?
All right, so surprising nobody, my favorite like thing of all time, if I were to only pick one genre of game, would be Shadowrun. I've often said on this and the other podcasts that if a good Shadowrun MMO ever came out, I'm sorry, WoW, but I would break up with you. Shadowrun is my happy place. As far as what class or what class I would play that would make it my favorite, it would be the physical adept. Now, Shadowrun has this thing where, and I'm sorry, I'm going to talk for a bit. Anybody can learn magic. Anybody could be a magi. Anybody could be a user of ritual magic or runes or anything like that. There wasn't like some divine spark or anything that you needed to do that. The only one that required that was if you were playing like a shaman in which you made a deal with whatever totemic spirit you were dealing with, whether it was rat or something else. But physical adepts use sort of a... they're like monks almost in D&D. They can go ahead and focus themselves and use sort of that energy, that chi energy, to make themselves stronger or faster. They can basically become Neo from the Matrix, but they can also do things like learn magic or learn how to inscribe runes. My favorite character that I ever played in the tabletop Shadowrun experience for a very long campaign, rest your soul, Eli, miss you, buddy, was the Iron Ninja. She started life as a just an alcolyte. She was a mage alcolyte who wound up diving on a grenade to save the rest of the party. We back then, character creation took so long that instead of just having me make another character, we just retconned it and did a whole bunch of stuff where she got a whole bunch of like cyberware and everything else to bring her back up to speed, but she lost access to a lot of her magic, but she could still do physical adept stuff. So she could still run faster, hit harder, and do things like that. It was just kind of this really catch-all experience where if I needed to have my adrenaline up, I could. If I needed to punch a steel wall, I could. If I needed to increase my grip on, you know, whatever I was holding on to, I could. If I needed to jump further, I could, as long as I put the time and effort into focusing into it. I love physical adepts. They are sci-fi, like old school movie monks, kung fu master type things, and I absolutely adore them. I would play that. I would leave healing behind, and I would just be punching things and kicking things and yeeting things into the stratosphere. I'm going to shut up and let Matt talk, because I could probably talk about how I would make a Shadowrun MMO, because I literally have a document on my computer about what I would put into a Shadowrun MMO, because we did this as a thought experiment with one of my best friends who's in the game industry many, many years ago. So I have thought about this a lot. I'm going to shut up. Matt, go.
Well, I mean, you stole mine. I was going to talk
about... they're so good, right?
The last character I played in a Shadowrun game and the first character I played in a Shadowrun game were both physical adepts.
Yeah.
The last one was the one for your game.
Yep.
I had a ton of backstory for that character, and I never got to do anything with it.
No, because we wound up switching games. I'd love to go back and revisit that. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. But, the physical adepts is great. One of the reasons that they're great is that both Shadowrun and Cyberpunk do a thing called, they have a different name for it, but they both have a kind of thing where too much cyberware drives you crazy.
Cyberpsychosis or loss of humanity. There's a couple different terms for it.
But it's the same basic thing. That is one of the things that I'm kind of iffy on in terms of cyberpunk type games, is this idea. Like, because I think I understand that they're talking not so much about just having implanted things. They're talking about having stuff wired into your brain.
Yeah.
Because now your nervous system. You're using your brain and your nervous system as a control system for an electronic device that is not meant to be wired into a body. I get that. I understand that's where they're going with it. But it is one of those things that makes it harder for me to like certain archetypes. And for me, the physical adept was perfect because you can basically be the same as a street samurai character without losing your humanity,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the things I liked about the adept. Also liked about the adept is that they can't disarm you.
Yeah.
They can't take away your punching.
Like they can take your gun, they can take your sword and everything else, because you everything else, you could wield a weapon, but then you can still punch like a truck.
Yeah, they can't take it away from you. So the physical adept is a really top tier one for me if I were making a kind of game like that. Another one that I think about all the time, though, and this comes back to what Liz was saying earlier, so I really am going to bring it up, is one of the things I like about Cyberpunk when you're 2077, when you really get into it, is how you can hack people and how hacking people rather than, you know, the security system of the bank you're at or whatever. Like every mission I had where I had to go in and try and accomplish things, hacking people and doing stuff to people directly through their own implants was the approach I took. And I liked that a lot in Cyberpunk 2077 because with the right build, you could mess people up before they ever got to you. There's specific ones like the synapse burn one, the one where you just basically make people's implants start shocking them until they're unconscious. There's one where you pick a guy and you basically inflict temporary cyberpsychosis on that guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And once you have that ability, you will never have to worry about a fight again because you will just, they have some they have some really high tone security. I'll make that one start shooting everybody. Everyone's like, oh God, and they're fighting in there. You can hear them shooting each other and you can just sit there and go, looking at my watch. Da-da. I like that concept. It's one of the things that if you ever played the game Watch Dogs.
Yes.
Watch Dogs.
The original, not the second one.
Yeah. The Watch Dogs tried really hard for this, but because nobody has implants like that, they had to use cell phones and stuff. And they really overestimated to the point of absurdity what a cell phone will actually allow you to do. But the idea was there of actually hacking the people. And that's the part I like about the way the Cyberpunk does hacking. It does basically with quick hacks and you know, the more elaborate infiltration stuff, what you have in Cyberpunk is a way to basically put a magic system into Cyberpunk without it being labeled as a magic system. And it only would work in a society as heavily chromed as the one you see in 2077, where everybody has an implant of some kind. Even people, like, there's a quest where somebody like flags you down and begs you to take them to a Ripper Dock because the quote unquote black market cyberware that they have implanted in a specific region of their body is going haywire. And if you don't take them, it will explode. And if you're male, you should be feeling very uncomfortable right now. If you have male genitalia, I'm sorry. If you have a penis, very bad place to have something go haywire. And they don't make a big deal out of it, but the fact that they have that quest, the fact that they've said, you know, think about this. If you have implants everywhere in your body, you are now vulnerable, like a refrigerator is right now in our society. Since everybody's appliances have, you know, wired
internet connections. Since everything's connected, yeah.
Yeah, you can now hack somebody's fridge. Imagine when you can hack somebody's foot or
heart. Let's just keep that general because that might going too specific might be triggering. So I'm just saying
that's the kind of thing that you can do in 2077. And that's the kind of way when I went for a hacker, that's the kind of hacking I specialized in. I went right after people. Because once if you hack the people, it doesn't matter if the alarm is going off. All the people are unconscious or dead. They can't stop you.
Yep.
And it's not like robots are going to stop you. Oh, a robot. Yeah, that's real bad. Boom. Robots are the easiest thing in the world to hack. I would go with something along those lines. I would go with a class that did that kind of hacking because I really liked it. I thought it was an interesting change of pace from other games that are cyberpunk-ish but don't really think about it. One of the things that the game does really well, and one of the things I think both games do really well, by the way, Shadowrun or Cyberpunk, because they're both originally pen and paper, is they're aware of the effect of this kind of stuff on regular people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I loved about Shadowrun was, you know, dragons are showing up. What does that do to, like, you know, just people?
Yeah.
Just live in a place. Like, they look up and there's a giant dragon climbing its way up a building and their first instinct is to scream, but they're like, oh wait, that's the CEO.
Yeah.
You know,
or the fact that, like, you know, they have to deal with the supernatural on a regular basis as well, which is something that's one thing that I do like about Shadowrun that Cyberpunk doesn't have.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
Cyberpunk is 100% rooted in reality where it's, and I hate to say it like that, but
in the physically possible.
The physically possible,
they can stretch it. They can stretch it, but they can't just ignore it.
Whereas Shadowrun, to me, is why I prefer it, is because it's both that, but then it also includes the esoteric. Like, you're talking about dragons, but also like all of a sudden there's a, you know, a rat spirit running through the street, or, you know, the rot is an elemental force, or there is an opposing force of decay. There is a thing with the Eldritch as well. Like, all of these things coexist in the same universe. So yeah, like
you might, if you have a problem in your house, you might actually have to go down to a certain neighborhood and talk to the person behind the desk who seems pretty normal, but then they come to your house and they literally have all these scrolls and charms and everything. And they just have to go through them until they figure out, Oh, I know what this is. What is it? Oh, you have a termite spirit. You need to burn this house down and get the heck out. There's no coming back to this. No, you are boned, my friend. And it's like that kind of thing happened. Like I mentioned, my first character was an adept. My first character was an amnesiac elf who had no idea who he was. And I spent the first two sessions literally just being carried around by the other players, not knowing who I was. Then the elves of Tir Tangiri attacked. And I kicked all their butts by myself. And I was like, what just happened? And the DM's like, oh, yeah, here's your actual character sheet. I'm like, what the heck? I can do all this? Yep. Mm-hmm. You're a paladin.
But that's another good point. Like that's the other thing that like Shadowrun does to Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk like has the mega cities, and you have things like, you know, when you talk about the main settings and things like that, they're always like cities. They're always city based. Whereas in Shadowrun, it could be a city based, and there are absolutely, you know, like your versions of Pacifica and stuff like that. Those exist. But then you can also go to Tir na n'Og. Because that's a place that exists. You have
Ireland got taken over by the elves.
Yeah, Ireland got taken over by the elves and the Fae. You have the vast majority of North America that has been reclaimed by the native people, because magic is real again. And I mean, all those you know, first people shaman that were calling down the rains all of a sudden could call down the rains for real, and like started to call lightning strikes or summon their ancestors to come into a war host. So then they had to have treaties or like. All of this stuff, like, to me, makes a richer world than just the despair of Cyberpunk. Because, yes, there is that same despair in Shadowrun, but there's also tempered by this sort of limitless possibility. Because everything is possible in Shadowrun. Cyberpunk, you're just looking for the most glorious death at the longest span of life you possibly can, because everybody dies. It's just whether you're going to be the face on the billboard or you're going to be the name in the gutter. Like, it's inevitable. Everything marches to the same direction. There is no other outcome, right? So
yeah, it is an interesting thing to talk about, but we have been talking about it for a bit here, and it is now probably time to wrap everything up and end the show. Mostly because at this point we've been yammering on over Liz for like 10 minutes.
I'm sorry, Liz. I will, but the,
it's all good.
This question is my damn. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I knew when I saw that he asked it that I had to throw it in there. I am going to say, just before we go, though, thank you to Joe Rees. I wanted these guys to see the email. We didn't get a chance to read it, but I definitely thank you for saying that. That
was yes, very nice. Seriously, thank you very much, Joe Rees. That was very nice of you to say, and we appreciate you.
But now, we're going to get Joe to do a spiel, and then we are going to end the show.
Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast with a queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you have questions for us, you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line Podcast of Blizzard Watch, or you can go to our Discord. We've got a queue and podcast questions channel for non-patrons because, you know, guys, seriously, watching the show, sending us questions, just telling other people about it, that is a huge help, and we thank you so much for it. If you can't afford to be a patron, however, we also have the Patreon Q&A Podcast Questions channel, which we do check first because you guys allow us to keep the lights on, and we appreciate that as well. But this has been the Blizzard Watch Podcast. On behalf of myself, Liz, and Joe, thank you all so much for being here, and we will be back next week.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.